Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Collection by Mika Lane. Narrated by Jillian Macy and Tristan James. Chapter 1. Keely.
Smack.
Ouch! I am not a pincushion.
A skinny creature with the neck of a giraffe twisted away from me, ripping the delicate fabric I was trying to piece together around her skeletal arm right out of my cramped fingers. And if that weren't bad enough, she turned and smacked my hand.
Did someone really just smack my hand?
I hadn't been smacked since I last engaged in some sort of infraction like rolling my eyes or sassing an adult. The freak of nature who stood before me, said hand smacker, who got paid thousands of dollars to scowl and slink down a runway wearing my fashion designer boss's creations, failed to realize I was the one holding the sharp objects. With large sewing shears hanging on a ribbon around my neck and a handful of straight pins between my fingers, I could cripple her if she didn't start to show me some respect. Her sharp elbows were no match for my weapons. Well, straight pins couldn't cripple anyone, but I like to imagine they could. Twice a year, during New York Fashion Week, my boss, one of the top designers in the world, had a big runway show. And I was one of the many junior designers who were turned into office bitches for a week, doing all the shit work that made a runway show come together perfectly. The newspapers, magazines, and cable programs that covered the shows only portrayed the pretty side of the production. Beautiful men and women sashaying down the catwalk in their perfect hair and makeup under the best lighting money could buy, and with some of the loudest freaking music you'd ever hear outside of a nightclub. What the public didn't know, however, was that the shows, which took more work than building the Egyptian pyramids and cost thousands of dollars, were over in minutes. All that work for 10 or 15 minutes of pomp and circumstance. If that's the case, why bother? I asked when I was the new girl on Forrest's team. And after staring at me like I had two heads, one of the office snots explained it this way. If you do show during Fashion Week, you may or may not be noticed, but hopefully you would. And if you didn't, people would draw all manner of conclusions about you, your collection, your business, and your general ability to walk the face of the earth with your head held high. So you kind of had to show. Not that my boss minded the incredible burden it put on his staff, nor the money that was sucked out of his coffers. He didn't have to do the shit work, nor did he have to work for a pittance like the rest of us, because the company's money went to impressing the editors of Vogue and Elle, rather than be used to pay us minions. Ah, the benefits of ownership. But hey, no one forced us to work there. No, we were pretty much complete idiots all on our own. But at that particular moment, I was a desperate woman. With the start of the show only minutes away, my boss was on the other side of the room shaking hands and air-kissing celebrities, fashion press, and other important people, while discreetly glancing over his shoulder in my direction. And his look told me all I needed to know. It was on me to make sure the first model supposed to walk in the show was in her outfit and ready to go, no matter what it took. Things were such a scramble in the run-up to a show like ours that regardless of the state the garments were in, open seams needing to be sewn, missing zippers or buttons, it didn't matter. They were still paraded down the runway. All it took was a needle and thread and occasional glue to get them to stay on the bodies showing them off. That left us pinning, sewing, taping, and gluing up to the final minutes. This business-as-usual practice was not normally a problem, except that, at the moment, I was dealing with the biggest prima donna supermodel on the planet. Translation, major pain in the ass. Just days before, the tabloids reported she'd beaten a cab driver over the head with her purse because he dropped her off on the wrong side of the street. I guess I was lucky I got off with a mere hand slap. "I'm sorry," I explained to the twig, trying not to choke on my words. That's what those of us in the office, who are buddies, called the models behind their backs. Twigs. Like Twiggy, that famous model from back in the day. Anyway, the twig looked down at me as if I were lower than dirt on the bottom of her shoe. And because I was desperate to get her on the runway, make my boss look good, and keep my job, it was a role I was temporarily willing to play.
"Look at my beautiful girl," my boss cooed as he floated over to us.
The twig rolled her eyes dramatically.
"Oh, Forrest, it's been such a day. And now look at me, just look at me," she whined.
Forrest and I looked her up and down. If there was something we were supposed to acknowledge, it was lost on me. The woman looked perfect as I pulled one more stitch, knotted my thread for security, and stepped back to let Forrest admire his masterpiece. He stepped in front of me since I'd worked my magic and was no longer needed. He took the twig's hands in his own and leaned close to murmur something in her ear. Whatever it was, he'd done the right thing because her face instantly brightened. She was ready to walk, and he led her by the hand to the backstage area where the rest of the models had assembled. In the moments before they were to go on, they looked bored, not to mention hungry, standing there with their arms crossed and chatting amongst themselves. What did models talk about with each other?
"You're so skinny, wow. Oh no, you're much skinnier and prettier too. No way, you're prettier."
And on and on. Anyway, I could only guess what they conversed about, because they didn't talk to me or any of my coworkers, unless they wanted something like a glass of water or a carrot stick to suck on. Deafening show music began to play as people with headsets ran around like maniacs, and the first set of models marched out onto the runway in Forrest's latest designs. I waited where he and the twig had left me. She'd return in moments, and I had to help her into her next outfit. While cooling my heels, I waved across the room at my coworker, Muse, over on the men's side, dealing with male models and their outfits. I envied his job. Working with the guys was a breeze compared to some of the bitches I had to contend with. My twig returned with a light sheen of perspiration on her forehead, which a deft makeup artist dabbed away. Not to make excuses for her bitchiness, but I knew the runway lights were hot, and being sewn into a garment was not exactly comfortable. As soon as she held still, I took my stitch ripper and ran it up the seam I'd just sewn to close her in. With a couple pushes and pulls, I slipped the garment off and helped her step into the next one. I stood back to make sure she was good to go and nodded. She ran to line up again with her group, shook her head and rolled her shoulders and plunged into the spotlight. Since each model was to wear only two outfits, I was pretty much done. I sneaked out the back of the stage to stand unnoticed in the audience and watch the show, just like the few hundred guests attending that morning. The models came marching down the catwalk, first the women and then the men, all wearing the same disinterested expression, which was exactly what Forrest wanted. And if Forrest was happy, we were all happy. Twig after twig did that weird runway walk models do where they take longer than natural steps, putting each foot in front of the other to create a funny sway that made them look both awkward and badass at the same time. Then the male models came. They had their own weird way of walking, too, where they moved their shoulders back and forth in a pseudo-masculine move that no normal man would ever actually use. But, I had to say, as odd as their runway walk was, they were freaking drop-dead gorgeous. While a lot of the male models were androgynous to the point of actually appearing interchangeable with the women, our shows always used the butchest men Forrest could find. Actually, he didn't find any of them. The agency that helped us put on our shows found them. Forrest just approved them, a job he relished. I found an empty seat and settled into it, making sure I was in the shadows where no one could find me. I had to see as many of the outfits as possible come down the catwalk, especially the menswear ones I had worked on. But I didn't want Forrest to think I was slacking. He was actually an awesome guy and great boss. But during the shows, he'd whip himself into an insufferable lather, for which he'd later apologize. During the last show we had, when we were backstage and the models and guests had all left, he bent over a trash can and puked his guts up. Because fashion was glamorous, right?
Chapter 2. Rand.
Dude, what's up with these trousers?
My buddy Marlin whispered to me. I looked at what he was wearing, and then back at my ensemble.
I have no fucking idea, but this is some ugly shit,
I whispered back. The trousers we wore had some kind of weird diagonal fly that buttoned across the crotch instead of the standard vertical opening, presumably for great aesthetic fashion effect. Marlin lowered his voice to make sure no one could hear us.
Did Forrest really design this crap? Because if he did, he should have his head examined.
I looked around at the other male models in our small makeshift dressing room. Everyone looked a bit confused about the strange garments, but they were trying to just suck it up. Yeah, when you modeled in fashion shows, you never knew what the hell they were going to ask you to wear. But they paid us well, so we kept our mouths shut, unless they wanted us to wear assless chaps. That's when we would say, thanks but no thanks, and that had never happened anyway. So pants with weird openings were not the worst things in the world, but it did mean I had to have some dresser help me into them when I would have preferred to dress myself. Luckily, there was only one more change of outfit for this particular show, only one more weird-ass garment I'd have to wear down the runway for all the fashionistas in the audience who'd trip over each other just eating it up. Then I could get back into my street clothes of tattered jeans, a faded rock and roll t-shirt, and a beanie pulled down almost to my eyes. I blended in just like any New York slob once I washed off the nasty makeup they put on my face to cover a couple of zits and red spots. What could I say? Nobody's perfect, right? And no one passing me on the street would ever guess I'd just made a shitload of money for wearing ugly clothes and walking on a catwalk for 5 minutes. I almost felt guilty about it. Almost. And given where I started in life, it was a freaking miracle I even had a roof over my head, much less a nicely growing bank account.
Come on, Marlin said, nudging me in the back. We gotta get lined up.
Yeah, yeah, I said, falling into line with the other guys who'd be walking the runway with us. Forrest, whose ugly clothes we were wearing, was running around like a maniac, making sure we were prepping to perfection, and that we had every hair in place. The funny thing was, he was going for a bit of a grunge look, so our hair was actually pretty messy. They'd spend hours making it just right, which I found to be pretty ironic.
Rand, Forrest said, tapping my shoulder and turning me so he would give me a once-over. Handsome as ever, honey,
he said, and moved on to check over the next model. I leaned toward Marlin, who was queued up just in front of me. Our other buddies, Shane and Cross, were toward the back of the line looking bored out of their minds.
Yo, Mar, you got any other shows lined up for this week?
I asked. He nodded without fully turning around. Right before we went on, they liked us to be quiet.
I do. I got a busy week, you?
He asked. Ugh, my agent is such a dick. He got in a fight with half the designers in town, and now they don't want to work with him. At that, Marlin turned fully to face me.
How long have I been telling you to get rid of that douchebag?
He asked. A loud shh came out of nowhere. He was right. I'd only hesitated to dump my agent because he'd gotten me into the business when I needed some money. But lately, he was on to fresher meat, and if he was burning bridges, that meant I was going to pay the price. A little sprite of a guy wearing a headset and holding a clipboard was speaking quietly into his mic and doing a countdown with the fingers on one of his hands.
Dude, after this show, I'm taking you right over to meet with my agent. He's gonna love you, Marlin said. With that, Marlin was tapped on the shoulder by the sprite. He walked past the curtain separating the backstage area, made a sharp right, and was gone from my view. After a 10-second interval, a hand on the shoulder let me know I was up. I turned the corner, walking into the blinding lights. I stopped down the runway in the strange militaristic walk they'd asked of us, in time to the blasting music. I passed Marlin on his way off the catwalk, and then I was on my own. Camera flashes went off, but I pretended not to notice them. I just kept my disinterested scowl on and stomped left, right, left, right, until I was at the end of the runway, where I pivoted to head back and give everyone one last look at Forrest's latest creation. From the applause, he must have done something right. They were eating it up. Just before I passed the next guy coming out, I caught sight of a woman in the audience sitting against the wall watching the show. While I had only a split second to register, she was the cute blonde I'd seen running around backstage with the female models before they'd gone on. She was beautiful, sure, but what had got my attention, I suppose, was the graceful way she handled the pre-show chaos. Before I knew it, I was off the stage and rushing back to my next outfit change. Marlin, just steps ahead of me, was already dressed and ready to go. A dresser unbuttoned my clothes, which I stepped out of as quickly as I could. He had the next shirt over my head, and in moments, I was redressed and once again in line behind Marlin. Shane and Cross were still being fussed over when a hairdresser checked me and a makeup artist dabbed something across my forehead, presumably to absorb the sheen of sweat I always got from the goddamn boiling lights. "What you doing tonight?" Marlin mumbled out of the corner of his mouth. I gotta get some studying in. I got a history exam coming up. Cool. You liking your classes? He asked. Did I like my classes? Did a bear shit in the woods? I freaking loved everything about City College. From its dumpy campus to its brilliant teachers and everything in between. No one ever expected me to go to college, especially me. It hadn't crossed my mind, nor the minds of anyone in the family I grew up in. It just wasn't done. I'd never even known anyone who'd even been to college, aside from the teachers I had in grade school. But modeling, which I fell into in a completely accidental way, broadened my horizons and made me believe the key to upward mobility, at least mine anyway, would be to get a degree under my belt. It was great for paying the bills and even building a nest egg, but it wasn't a long-term thing. Not for me, nor for anybody, really. I passed Marlin again as I entered the runway and he stomped off. The blonde was gone, probably to get back to work, and I was backstage again before I knew it. We had to wait around for a few minutes while Forrest walked out on the stage and bowed, making his little speech, thanking everyone for contributing to his latest collection. We'd run out and surround him with even more applause while he took several deep bows to the audience. It was an odd ritual, but then fashion was a strange game anyway. For example, the model who'd been loudly bitching out the pretty blonde earlier, I watched as she popped a pill into her mouth and chased it down with a bottle of water. Guess she wouldn't be eating the rest of the day.
Chapter 3. Keeley. Had someone just punched me in the stomach? Because it sure felt like it. The show had come off without a hitch, in part because people like me worked our asses off around the clock in the days leading up to the event. Even better, Forrest's latest collection was met with raucous cheers and applause. I was thrilled for him, for me, for the whole company. He'd be all over the style pages for days, just like he always was. The press, celebrities, big shots from the luxury stores, they all loved him. And during the brief interlude when I'd sneaked into the audience, I'd had the chance to see a couple of the men's outfits presented by our gorgeous male models. Forrest had a talent for choosing guys who would make his clothes look awesome. Today was no exception. The mood for this show was on the rough and tumble side, with the guys walking the runway with meanish scowls, messy hair, and an almost violent stomp-stomp of their feet. In any other setting, it would have looked like cheesy overacting. But in the context of a short fashion show, when you had only minutes to make an impression, It somehow worked. What didn't work for me, however, were the models who threw their clothes on the floor when they were changing back into their jeans and t-shirts. What the hell? Anyway, I turned my ear to listen to Forrest being interviewed by someone from Women's Wear. "Forrest, you knocked it out of the park again with this fabulous new collection. How do you do it? What is your secret?" the reporter asked. Forrest looked in my direction with a grateful smile and held his hand for me to join him. My heart started to pound. I'd never spoken to a reporter before. And cripes, I looked like shit because I'd been up almost all night and had been running all day. But he didn't seem to have a camera with him, so maybe I could just say something brilliant, and those who later read my words would just assume I was as gorgeous as the model who'd just stepped on a pile of clothing in her hurry to get out of the place. But at that moment in time, the bitchy, slobby models meant nothing to me. If their haughty attitudes were the price to pay for our, well, Forrest's success, then I could stomach a little humiliation. I hustled over to my boss and Women's Wear, quickly organizing my thoughts about what had inspired the season's collection and what we thought it meant to the fashion world at large. I mean, what Forrest thought it meant to the fashion world at large. Anyway, I put my hand in his open one, and I saw tears in his eyes. That gave way to a bit of wateriness in my own. I took a deep breath and readied myself for the reporter's first question. But for some reason, he just kept looking right at my boss, like I wasn't even there. "Forrest, the fabrics you chose for this season were beyond sumptuous. Can you tell us a bit about them?" "Well, we started by traveling to the far corners of the earth to see what cottage industries, you know, tiny little villages and such, were able to produce. We came across the most beautiful silks and woolens I'd seen in my entire career when we were in India and Pakistan. I mean to tell you, I nearly cried with joy when we found these scarce treasures." Forrest continued clasping my fingers while he told his story. I stood there with an idiotic smile on my face, nodding politely to back up his bullshit story about traveling halfway around the world. The furthest he ever ventured was to Fire Island in the summer. Well, I patiently waited my turn. When he paused to take a breath, I cleared my throat and prepared to jump in. But I wasn't fast enough. "And Forrest, where did your inspiration for the unique diagonal opening on the men's trouser come from? I mean, it looked like something that might have come from Napoleon's era. I love how you embraced that, rather than designing the pants with the typical vertical fly zipper." Okay, then. They'd called out the most unique design detail of the whole show, and this was what I was prepared to comment on. My brainchild. My baby. "Well, thank you for your kind words," I started, ready to explain why I'd added this particular flourish. But Forrest beat me to it, again. "The credit for that, my friend," he said to the reporter, "goes to my assistant designer right here." I loved that man and the way he was cool about sharing credit. "Muse, Muse, are you still here?" he called over the racks of clothes. What? Why was he calling my coworker Muse? "Oh, hey, boss," Muse sang out as he skipped toward us with a huge grin, his signature bow tie slightly cockeyed. "Muse, this is a reporter from Women's Wear, and he wants to hear about the origin of the diagonal buttoning on our trousers," Forrest said, throwing his free arm around Muse's shoulders. Something like confusion, and then anger, roared through my head. If Muse had answered the question, I hadn't heard him. What the fucking fuck was screaming through my brain like a goddamn broken record? I wanted to wrest my fingers out of Forrest's grip, but he was squeezing them so tightly my hand hurt. But Muse blathered on, and Forrest watched him with adoring eyes. It was as if I wasn't even there. He must have said something funny, because Forrest finally released my hand to bring his to his forehead to feign something scandalous being said. That was my opportunity to escape, which I did with great speed. I ran to the other side of the backstage area and lowered myself to the floor in between a couple rolling racks. And it just so happened that hanging right in front of me were all the trousers with the diagonal openings. Yes, the design detail Muse and Forrest were gushing about with the reporter I'd just run away from. The design detail that I had developed. Not Muse, not Forrest, me. I wasn't sure how long I sat there, hiding among the trousers like a little kid. The fucking trousers that I had designed. The wool for which had not come from halfway around the world, but rather one of the dusty Chinese fabric showrooms in Midtown. Oh God, oh God, oh God. Devastated, that's what I was. Muse was my friend. Forrest was my hero. My belief system, such as it was, shattered. Demolished, really, by two of the people I cared about most. Where the fuck do you go from there? When I emerged from my hiding place, I couldn't be a petulant, sore loser forever. I straightened my cramping legs and found the reporter gone. Forrest and Muse were chatting like old friends. Maybe they were sleeping together? Nah, Muse wasn't Forrest's type. He preferred big, hairy guys, and Muse looked like he'd blow away in a stiff wind. Plus, he wore bow ties. Keely, I wondered where you'd run off to, Forrest said. Hey, can you pack up those dresses over there? He asked, pointing to a pile I'd seen at least two of the twigs stomp on with their dirty black boots. Yes, of course. Forrest, do you think I could talk to you for a sec? I asked, picking up armfuls of soiled dresses. Thank goodness we had another set of samples, because these were pretty much trashed. Muse stood there with his usual impish grin, making no move to either help pick things up or leave Forrest and me to talk. Forrest approached me. What's up, Keel? What's on your mind? I glanced over his shoulder at Muse, who was still watching with great interest. Muse, I said, can you give us a minute? His smile dissolved into a scowl as he slunk away. Forrest, I said, no point beating around the bush. Forrest, you know when the reporter asked you about the collection's trousers and the inspiration for them? I asked.
Yes, I do.
He was still glowing from the show excitement. Come on, Keely, put on your big girl panties. Forrest, that was my design, not Muse's, I said simply. He leaned closer as if I hadn't spoken loudly enough. Maybe I hadn't. So I leaned closer to his ear. Forrest, those trousers were my design, not Muse's. Tilting his head, he furrowed his brow.
Keely, I'm not sure what you are saying, he said.
How the hell could I make it clearer? Forrest, I think Muse is taking credit for my work, I said. His hands immediately flew up like a stop sign. He took a step back as if I were contagious. Then he took a deep breath and put an arm around my shoulders, the same way he had with Muse, to walk me to a corner of the room.
Keely, I know you are a hard worker, and you are a wonderful designer. Someday you will do great things, he said.
Wait, what? Someday I'll do great things? Forrest, I can show you my sketches in Illustrator. They'll have date marks. His voice grew stern.
Keely, I'm going to have to ask you to drop this. I don't need any drama in my company, nor accusations of stealing. I told you, your date will come. You are a very talented woman.
He turned and walked away, leaving me standing holding the pile of soiled samples. But I couldn't see the big, nasty footprints on them. My eyes were too full of tears.
Chapter 4. Marlin. Damn if I...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?